Hi everyone, Camille here at 6 p.m. in London, 2 p.m. in Buenos Aires, and 3 a.m. in Sydney. We're live. You're listening to Cosmic, exploring the world of change, perception, the mind, narratives, storytelling. Thank you for tuning in. We keep learning about the artist's superpowers in season 3 of the show, talking to artists and thinkers from around the world with a mission to clarify why the artistic practice matters so much and why do we still need to promote its magic in 2020. It seems that over the last few hundred years, the left brain took over and is making it harder and harder for humans to reevaluate what the right brain brings to the table. It's a big topic, central to our work, and in this episode, we're going to get a good brush up on concepts we may have heard of, or that we may know already, but that most of us probably don't factor into our lives and modus operandi. Another good reminder that knowledge is just knowledge, and left out in the knowledge box simply feeds the system that rewards knowledge, soon taken over by machines, as you know. Our good friend Einstein said it, imagination is more important than knowledge. So that makes a nice quote on Instagram, but are we really considering this as a society?
Never trust the sound of rain upon a river rushing through your ears.
Are you going to let yourself be removed from the full capacities of your brain? From accomplishing your full potential as a human being? I'm launching a virtual telepathic survey right now. Yes or no? Please answer. Most respondents say no. We can go on.
All the smashing windscreen of a car.
Our guest today is artist and physicist Dr. Jasmine Pradicito, a relentlessly creative person who for many years collided her artistic mind with science and difficult equations. This woman is dynamite. She supports others in reclaiming their full creative powers, meaning we typically lose them, our creative powers. You know that, right? You can adjust your headphones, make sure you're comfortable or somewhere pleasant. We're going to travel a little bit, as usual. Okay, let's start from the top, shall we? As always, I got some good music and sounds to transport us and boost our right brain activity. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Countdown to zero, symbol of possibility. Chapter 1, From Born Genius to Quietly Serving the Ruling Class. Yes, it's a punchy title. It's important for that one, because sadly, you'll see it's not an overstatement. Let's see.
You know, the creative process has always fascinated me. How do we have a creative breakthrough? And until very recently, scientists did not want to touch the myth of genius. You know, it was one of those things that you were born with. You know, there were a few people throughout life. You know, you had the Mozarts and the Beethovens and the Einsteins. Invariably, they were always men, of course, because the female geniuses were not documented. Right, but there were female geniuses as well. Marie Curie, the only one to have won 2 Nobel Prizes in 2 completely different subjects. But anyway, they wouldn't tackle this because it was this kind of big cloud, sort of. And of course, more recently, we've started to investigate how you have creative thoughts. And they've used everything from jazz players, because from what I understand with jazz, although I'm not a musician myself, it's the highest form of artistic creation, because it's almost like when you're driving a car, it's so on automatic, you're so au fait with the alphabet of music that you no longer think. You no longer think about how the notes go together. And, you know, they've been looking at how the brain lights up and so we now understand, and for me this is such a valuable thing to understand, because now I understand the process of how I have a creative breakthrough. I no longer panic about inspiration, where the next idea is going to come from.
So here with this jazz story, I have to use the occasion to play the song that is the most feared by jazz musicians. It's considered the pinnacle of jazz improvisation because it has a complex chord progression and also because it's extremely fast. It's called Giant Steps by John Coltrane.
So we know that, you know, if you get a problem, the way that I treat it now is the first stage is the preparation. So it's almost like the mind minestrone thing. So this is like when I meet somebody new like you, I go, oh, there's all this input, there's all this, and I'm adding it to the soup. And that's how I see it, as a soup. And once I've got enough of the information, or probably never have enough of the information, I then go off and do something completely unrelated, invariably. And you allow that wonderful time of incubation. And the incubation phase, to me, is one of the bits that we underestimate the power of doing nothing in. So if you think of going for a walk in nature or something, whether you're going for a walk, you're cleaning the cupboards, you're having a shower, whatever, these seemingly innocuous acts that you're going through are the times at which your subconscious allows you to incubate, the times at which your mind does the clever stuff all on its own, right? That's the thing, you don't have to look for it, it does it all on its own. And if you allow that and you're open, you get that wonderful, you know, chemical hit to the brain where you have the illumination, the point at which you go, yeah, I've just had an idea. ¶¶ highly addictive. Highly addicted. I am, without a shadow of a doubt, an ideas junkie. And the reason I get so passionate about talking about creativity and sharing it is I want everyone else to have the same experience. Because if you get your highs from creating, making, thinking, you don't need to consume. And it, to me, this is completely directly related to a new systemic future of a much more sustainably sourced lifestyle.
A few years ago, NASA wanted to understand who are the most creative people on their staff to be able to put them on the most difficult problems. They commissioned a study to George Land, quite known in the field of innovation management. The results of that study, a longitudinal test of creative potential, had the effect of a bombshell. Tested a representative group of 1,600 five-year-old children on their ability to find creative solutions to a given problem. My question for you right now is, what percentage do you think, what percentage of that group fell in the genius category out of those 1,600 five-year-old children? What percentage of that group fell in the genius category? Okay, so 5-year-old, 98% fell in the genius category. 98% of the group. At 10-year-old, only 30% was in the genius category. At 15-year-old, 15%. And at 31-year-old, 2%. Only 2% could be considered as genius. Probably the 2% of the population that create all the ideas we need today. I don't know. It's crazy, isn't it? And as a quick reminder, we observe two kinds of thinking in the brain. The divergent thinking, imagination, generating new possibilities, and convergent thinking. So decisions, judgments, criticizing. And it's like the brake and the accelerator. The problem, or the accelerator and the brake, I should say. The problem is that we're compelled to use both at the same time through the system, right? We get an idea, so we accelerate, and the first thing we do then is judge it, criticize it. We brake the brake pedal. It will never work, it's too expensive, what are people going to think of me, blah blah blah, right?
I'm glad you mentioned children, because there was something I was reading a lot. It was a while back. NASA did a whole load of research. I think it was in the 1960s or 70s. And at the end of the research, it was something like 98%.
So that's the survey I just talked about. And here is what Jasmine told me. Let me find the bit here. There you go.
I mean, I was doing a lot of reading when my own son was growing up. And apparently until about the age of 7, your prefrontal lobe at the front of your head, which is the source of your inhibitions, is not developed. So until about the age of 7, you don't really get embarrassed by stuff. And you see that. Kids don't care about the stupid, wonderful things that they do. But of course, after that age, you start the inhibitions and you start to look at how other people do things and you start to judge, am I different? Am I... And of course, as an adult, that's why we partake of things that lower our inhibitions, you know, whether it be drink or whatever it is that it is. But the education system, and having experienced working with children for 20 odd years, the education system is not designed to encourage that type of divergent thinking, really.
Welcome to the real world, she said to me, condescendingly. Take a seat, take your life, plot it out in black and white. Well, I never lived the dream of the prime kings and the drama queens. I'd like to think the best of me is still hiding up my sleeve. But I'd love to tell you, stay inside the lines. But something's better on the other side. I wanna run through the halls of my high school. I wanna scream at the top of my lungs. I just found out there's no such thing as the real world.
It was interesting sometimes when people kind of go, oh, what's the point of creativity? And the other thing that I get all the time is, oh, but I'm not creative. Because instantly people associate creativity with the art of making a painting or creating a piece of music or writing a book. And as I always point out, actually they are very tiny, small creative acts you do every day, from what you wear to how you make a sandwich. Most of the Nobel laureates, if you look at the Nobel laureates who won prizes for science, they were 25 times more likely to either have been artistic, to play a musical instrument, to create with their hands. And almost without exception, all of them kind of said it helped us have our breakthroughs, you know, scientific discoveries. So this idea of creativity is, as I've mentioned to you before, you know, the small little acts I talk about every day leading to great big paradigm shifting acts of creativity. This is why, to me, it is, well, this is one of the many reasons it's so important. And in an aging population where people don't think, you know, what are you going to do if you're living to 100 years old? How are you going to find your value, or how are you going to get other people to find value in you? One of the things I love about creative thinking is that it's making connections between seemingly unconnected, disparate things. And of course, the longer that you've lived, the more things you have to create connections between. So for me, as long as you have, you know, the privilege of having your health and the ability to do things, as you become older, you become much more creative. It's not something that is, you know, you have to have your big breakthrough in your 20s or that's it, that's the end of your life. It's not like that at all. And again, some of the people who've won the biggest prizes have done it much later in life.
Mama, bengani ki nyando, antera ni ponbe, bengani ki anegibo.
Okay, most children, most of us, are still manufactured in a way that ensures they will be, we will be serving the ruling class. What we are doing to our brains is actually even more dramatic than this, because the more we go on with the left brain, the more we are digging our own grave as a species. We'll talk more about this, of course, through our study of perceptions, the power of the arts, right brain integration. Yeah, we're going to get nerdy about what's going on exactly, just to reassure the convergent thinker in you. but we'll quickly need to diverge from there. Yes?
Mama, venga niki milong, mintabe ni mapan, venga moki miningi yabukai. Mama eh, ubi choni me mange, ubi lep me mimbura, aveniri yombi wo.
In the meantime, chapter 2, colliding with science and difficulty. Jasmine's story with the completion of her PhD in physics is a great example of a collision between the artistic mind and science. Not an obvious combination.
We're obviously shaped by our families and our families' expectations. And, you know, the previous generation, you know, things were, you know, difficult for them, especially if they were immigrants, if they came from other countries. And the only way to escape was to get an education. So I was the first one in my family to go to university. So it was a big deal to, and of course, we only knew there were certain jobs that were good classical jobs, weren't they? Being a doctor or being an engineer or being a lawyer, whatever it is. The concept of me being an artist, of course, must have filled my parents with horror. You know, no, you need to go and get a proper career. Now, in retrospect, I appreciate the fact that I did the science that I did, because I've always had something to fall back on. Because as we know, the arts, in terms of finance, it is incredibly difficult to support yourself for any length of time in order to allow your practice to continue. I was an only child. I was an only child, and I did spend huge amounts of time on my own because both of my parents were working. So I think I created a very colorful internal life for myself. You know, that's one of the things that's been fascinating about COVID, when I've spoken to some of my friends who have really struggled. And to me, this wasn't any different really from the rest of life. That makes me sound like I'm a really unsocial animal. I'm not. But I do love my own company, and I do love being in my own mind palace. So I guess from early conditioning, where you know the only stimulation you're really going to get is from yourself or from the outside world or from books or from drawing, it becomes part of your conditioning, doesn't it? And I'm also one of those people that if somebody says to me I can't do something, it will make me want to do it even more. right? In my mind, I'm saying something very rude, but I'm not going to say it out loud on here. But so I think you're one or the other. I think you either learn to think, no, I'm not going to let that break me. I'm going to show you. And I think that was always the voice that was in my head.
And the fake plastic girl that you bought from a rubber man in a town full of
if you think too much about difficult things, you will never do them. So the PhD was one, the sculpture that I've just finished for London is another one. If I'd known how difficult it was going to be, would I ever have signed up for it? I don't know. I didn't have grandiose ideas of adding to the scientific world at the time. And it was probably in some ways, it's the most challenging thing I've ever done intellectually. Not intellectually, academically. It was the point at which I knew my limits. I knew there were things I could do, and I knew that, you know what, it doesn't matter how hard I push myself, I am not going to get this, right? With any of these things, that doesn't matter how hard it gets, if you don't finish it, you will look back in a couple of years' time and go, damn, I wish I'd finished that. Right? It's only painful at the time. The pain disappears. I would go into the lab and I go, today I am mostly going to do this experiment. Usually I had no real idea of why I was doing it. And then sometimes it would work and it would be wonderful. And then I'd spend 3 months trying to remember what I'd just done. That's not how scientists work. So I knew that I wasn't, what's the word? I wasn't, not clinical, you know the word, I can't think of, but I wasn't, thank you. I wasn't methodical enough to do that for a living. I loved the ideas, I loved the breakthroughs, I loved the connection making. And of course, whilst I was doing that, I was also doing the art. So these two things were like, you know, kind of going off in my head, and I was doing the art in secret.
Beside her, I am the better man. When I look to leave her, I always stagger back again. Once I built an ivory tower so I could worship from above. When I climbed down to be set free, she took me in again. There's a big heart, son. Comes to greet me, she is mercy at my feet. Yeah, when I see a pin of charm, she just throws it back at me.
Once I dug an early grave to find a better land. She just smiled and laughed at me and took her blues back again.
It just wasn't the done thing. The number of times people went, well, how can you do both? I don't understand how you can do both. And I went, well, neither do I, but I'm having a go at it because I can't help it. But it has changed. It has changed. And I guess, again, just purely by accident, now you can pick up so many books about creative thinking. And I remember 10 years ago, I found 2 books on how to think creatively. And they are 2 that I go back to all the time. And now there are hundreds and hundreds of books on the shelves. So this is still a relatively new thing. And for me, it kind of came about completely organically, because after so many years, people kept saying, how do you think the way that you think? And I did not understand what they were asking me. Because I didn't realize it was a skill, because it wasn't something that I had done on purpose. It's just that I think scientists, artists, engineers, we have a natural curiosity about everything, and we want to know. We want to know how something works, or how can we change something, or, you know, when kids used to say to me, how did you know you were going to do this? I would go, I grew up always going, what would happen if I did this? It's as simple as that. What would happen if I did this? What would happen if I did this?
So I tried to warn her, I turned to see her weave. 40 days and 40 nights, and it's still coming down.
A, do something that possibly hadn't been done before, and B, trying to find a way of saying important things, but simply, because the elitism of science, the elitism of art, I think, God, there are so many people that are missing out on things just because they get hidden behind long words and complicated sentences, and everyone should share in this stuff, you know, because it's beautiful.
Smell smoke. Are we on fire? Am I the ashes of a brother of the moon? To be the act, to be the hour, to be the light, to be the way, to be the sin.
So yeah, this visual thinking, the conversations I used to have, because they were so challenging, and at that time I was starting to use software packages that could do some complicated maths for me. So I had to adapt and I had to learn how to do things. I was much better in the lab than I was at the theoretical side. And it taught me analysis. It taught me how to research. It taught me how to read things and extract what I needed. And I do that in my art practice all the time now. I kind of think, how do I want to make this, even if I don't know? And I have faith in my ability to go and find the research or the people or extract the information somehow.
Of a brother, of the motherland.
Chapter 3, Permission to be Creative. Very creative.
To be the hour. To be the light, to be the way, to be the sin. To find the time to make it right, to make it matter. To make it matter. To make it real.
Where the opportunities are now creeping in is that the way that artists think, this connection making, this ability to make metaphors visible, this ability to see the bigger picture, the bigger systems. If you look in the States, more and more masters of fine arts are being employed on the boards of companies. They're working with young doctors in order to teach them how to really look. Because if you can look at a painting, you can look at a patient and see the things that aren't being said. So I think the skills that artists have now, which are difficult, they're difficult to put. How do you make these tangible? How do you measure them? How do you make them quantitative? Because that's part of the problem with this whole creativity thing. The number of times, I've delivered a session or something and somebody said, yes, but Jasmine, how do we measure this? Can't. In the short term, you can't measure it. Unless you have, occasionally you will have a student that you will literally see them come alive in one evening. And I've had engineers email me out the blue and say, do you know what? I've changed my entire life. I haven't had many of those, but I've had a few. But I can guarantee that at some point in the future, they will have an idea they might otherwise not have had, or go down a path they might otherwise not have felt brave enough to do. So I think for artists, apart from the obvious artistic output, I think the way that they think and the way that they look at the world is something that's going to be valued even more as we go on.
I asked Jasmine one of my favorite questions. What would a world where everyone practices some form of art look like?
Oh man, that's a happy world. If everyone has permission, and not everyone, not everyone wants to do this. That's the thing. Some of us feel the need to kind of, go off and do things and some don't, and that's absolutely fine. But very often people need the permission. And I think one of the biggest tragedies in the world, Camille, is that every single human being has a talent, every single one. But unless you've had the opportunities to pick things up and try something, you never find out what that is. So some of it obviously is through lack of opportunity, lack of equality. But if every single individual could find that thing, I think it would change the whole world. And yes, I know I'm sounding incredibly idealistic, but we wouldn't have to have the conflict that we do. We wouldn't have to consume the things that we do, because that kind of self-esteem would come from you.
We try to fake it as we go. You try to take it like a pro. I try to listen, but you know I barely understand me.
Nobody said it was easy. No, no, no. Nobody said it was easy.
No denying, baby, we got way too good at fighting. We've been trying, can we talk it out before deciding?
People who are creative who have come from some sort of difficulty. There has been some sort of drama, angst, something in their part. Not everyone, I know, otherwise it's very stereotypical, but invariably, sometimes you need to find ways of overcoming things in order to get to the next level, whether it be creatively or personally or in your self-awareness. So some of it is society giving you permission, some of it is you giving yourself permission, and some of it is realizing that when you kind of start opening these boxes, you can't always control them. And to me, that's exciting.
Nobody said it was easy. No, no, no. Nobody said it was easy.
You find a way to complicate. We're wasting time.
Yeah.
Behind your eyes, don't compromise. We'll be just fine.
Nobody said. No.
Because people judge themselves. The other thing I've noticed again with any type of creativity, especially when you're working with older people or people who are very good at what they do in their work, they are so good at being good at things, the fact that they're going to have to start and be bad at something is almost prohibitive. To me, being childlike is not naive, it's not ridiculous, and that doesn't mean that I don't have my responsibilities and I don't have to go and do stuff in the big grown-up world, but I try and remember that joy of just being a kid, you know, and how fun things are, and how nobody actually cares if you mess up, really, and just owning things if they don't go right and going, well, that's okay, it didn't work, we can try it again.
And I couldn't ignore the fact.
Workshops with parents and kids, and nearly always when the parents come in, they are very reticent, they're very scared of any type of mess. And then the minute we start working, that invariably stops. So I think for parents in particular, it's a way of bonding with your children in a non, you know, I've done it with my son. How can you educate without seeming to educate? Doing something creative is one of the ways. Yes, it takes a bit of research. Yes, you have to get a few materials together, but it's a way that they can learn all the important stuff, as other people would see it, but also having fun. And parents having fun as well. There are an awful lot of parents that work incredibly hard that have, again, I'll give you an example. One of the engineers that I worked with on Creative Engineers Can Change the World, we run evening classes. And really top level engineer. And I remember one week he came in and he said, I need to thank you. And I said, what do you need to thank me for? And he said, well, whenever I would go home and have to play with my three kids after a long day, I resented it. He said, now that I realize it's actually part of my practice and that it will make me better at engineering, I enjoy it. And that again, it was like giving themselves permission to realize that everything they did, whether it was building Lego bricks, whether it was cooking something with their kids, you know, could you talk about the science? Could you talk about what you were making? It would feed into their practice. And I think when people see that they kind of realize this is, everyone's getting something from this. I just have to look at it differently.
If Monday's blue, Tuesday's gray, and Wednesday too, Thursday I don't care about you, it's Friday, I'm in love. Monday you can fall apart, Tuesday, Wednesday break my heart, Thursday doesn't even start, it's Friday, I'm in love. Saturday, wait. Sunday always comes too late, Friday never hesitates. I don't care if Monday's black, Tuesday, Wednesday, heart attack, Thursday never looking back, it's Friday, I'm in love.
So again, for parents, can you have a messy table? Can you plant things outside? Can you work in the garden with your kids? In terms of the environment, which is probably one of the most important topics for creatives of all descriptions now, can you learn something about the outside world while you're playing with your kids, while you're growing something, and have fun at the same time?
Monday you can hold your head, Tuesday, Wednesday stay in bed, on Thursday watch the walls instead, it's Friday, I'm in love. Saturday, wait. Sunday always comes too late. Friday, never hesitate. Dressed up to the eyes, it's a wonderful surprise to see your shoes and your spirits rise. Throwing at your friend, just smile at the sound. See, there's a sheet spinning round and round. Always take a big bite, such a gorgeous sight to see you.
Change, the like of which, you know, I don't think it's a bit tweaks here and there. I think the way that the future is going to be, we almost can't visualize yet. It's going to be so different. And that's exactly what artists and creative people do. They imagine things that don't even exist yet, and they can bring them into reality. And they can bring them into reality.
I'm just walking,
and they can bring them to reality.
I've got you.
So much, Jasmine, for your stories and thoughts, for your energy and all the light bulbs you ignited. Are we building a future that depends on knowing the right answer? Or are we seeking to accomplish our full potential? We can get back to that 98%, to that creative genius profile. It's in us. Let's rebuild that creative muscle. There are programs for this. There are people like Jasmine who are experts at creating this ignition and providing the materials to build from there. So I'll share the links to her work in the episode notes on our website. Let me know your crazy ideas. Let us know your story by email, for instance. hello@cosmic.show. Maybe we should do something unexpected together, shall we? Thank you to the Cosmic team for all the cosmic work. Thank you to all of you supporting the show with ideas and contacts, phone numbers. It's very much appreciated. And thank you for tuning in. You know what to do if you like what you've heard. Speak to you next week. Ciao.